And I know that you're anxious and eager to pose the first question. Here, first row on the left. Hello, congratulations on the film, especially Mikhail. I really loved Bull's Head and this film. And I wanted to ask you, how do you select actors in the casting? You know, before the screenplay, are you already thinking about who's going to play what? Basically, how do you focus that task? You know, any new projects, any new screenplay? Congrats, Numi, you're spectacular in the film.
Well, it's like a painter choosing colors. It's a composition, and I always start with the lead character, and this was Bob. And with this comes you choose a certain energy, a tone, a texture, a personality, of course, and then. You start with that. It's like a tuning fork of a symphony. You know, with that resonance, I start to work. And of course, up front, you have favorite actors that you admire, that whose energy you feel connected to. And that was, of course, exactly the case with Numi. And I think we all connected. I mean, Tom and Numi know each other. It went very fast. The casting process was really—I mean, it's like—it was all first choices, and all my first choices said yes. So I was the happiest director of the month when that happened. So.
Hello, congratulations about the movie.
I would like
to make two questions: one for you and one for Naomi. I would like to know how you get. That all that atmosphere of the movie is like is nothing is happening, but it's happening everything. I don't know if I can explain about that because there's no action scene, but it's like a thriller. You are completely intense. How you get that? And Naomi, I think that your role is really difficult because you are the middle of a triangle, a quadra with Rocco, that's another important actor, the little dog. How do you get all this? How was to work with all the team to get that? Because for me, it was like a theater, like a movie.
Wanna go first?
Yeah, Mikhail said something beautiful this morning, or was it yesterday? We've been doing so many interviews, but he said that I was the sun, and all these men were the planets circling around me. I like that.
Yeah, and, you have to see it. Hardy, Matthias, James, me, it's like a bunch of boys, right? So they need to find an energy without colliding to each other. So it's like a sun and the planets, you know, we're the planets like circling around.
So I was the sun in yeah. These men's life. Well, no, but I love the script from the first time I read it. And not only Nadia, not only my character, but the whole, the relationship and the triangle. And what was very crucial for me to be able to understand her and to make her, to give her justice and give her my soul, was to understand what she lived before, what you don't see in the movie. Because Dennis Lehane's writing is so precise and so specific. It is like a play. And then I knew that I needed to have everything in my body, in my spine, in my blood system, her background, and especially the relationship with Eric Dietz. So I spoke to, Mikhail doesn't rehearse anything, but we talked a lot, and I spoke to Matthias, and we kind of built a story together about like what happened between them, what kind of life were they living. So every, like in the situations with Tom, when I'm talking about Matthias, Matthias' character, you know, every question, you know, I get flashes in my head of situations we've been building that I have in my head. So even though it's the writing is quite sharp and stripped down, I have it all in my system. And I have memories that I created in my head. And that's, I love that part with acting, you know, collecting information and preparing and doing research and finding the person and having it in me.
I'm not sure if I remember the question. What was it? The question was that? A, yeah.
pásale por favor ese micrófono, sí. Adelante.
Sí, it's the muffler. How do you get the muffler? How do you get the muffler? Because it's nothing happening on the movie.
Oh, yes, yes. Scene,
but everything is happening.
Yeah. I mean, of course, it was already in the script. You know, it was things were, but I really chose to have the action taking place by the acting. You know, have a camera that was very steady, not big rough movements. There is a hold up in the bar, and I wanted it to be very realistic and like very like almost like quick, like things happen and you're like, whoa, did it just happen? And not, you know, with the very explicit way of, you know, presenting danger. I think danger can be much more threatening if it's very silent than noisy. So, and I think it was, I wanted to also have an opportunity to build out an aspect of the film which I call more like a suspenseful character study. Which is a portrayal of Bob, which is a slow burn, like peeling an onion, and have him slowly. It's like you can discover who he is in a slow way, because of course what you see is not what you get in the beginning, and that balance, that twist, has to go. And that was my choice, to go very slowly, and create the suspense. In more a minimalistic way than in a very spectacular way. And I hope it worked well. Thank you.
Yeah.
Hello, how are you? I would like to comment on so many things, but I can't. So first, I wanted to thank you for bringing James Gandolfini back. We really miss him. We admired this actor greatly, many of us did. And secondly, just say that the final minutes, like it's like pure noir film, just the final leg, the third act, and I congratulate you. Noumi, finally, I wanted to ask her, in 2007, I believe, you were here with Daisy Diamond, and you hadn't done the Millennium Trilogy, so obviously we didn't know about it, people didn't know about it. And I wanted to know what's your opinion on your career since then? Now we see you in American productions and in some super, you know, big budget productions. And another question, if you allow me, I think your father was Spanish. So due to those Spanish roots, that heritage, are you curious about working in Spain or working with a Spanish director, et cetera? Thanks.
Well, yes, I was here with Daisy Diamond, and a lot happened to me and to my life since then. And I've been so fortunate and blessed, and I don't know what star or what angels are protecting me. I've been working with some of the best people in the world, and it's sometimes I'm afraid that I will wake up in my girl room on a farm in Sweden and realized that it was all a beautiful dream. It's funny, I never read anything about myself. I don't really see myself from the outside that much. I work and I do the same work as I did with Daisy Diamond. I always try to be as truthful and real as possible. And I don't care if it's a big studio production or if it's a small Spanish indie film. I try to do as good as I can every time, and it's kind of it's a bit surreal that I've been, you know, I saw Bullhead, and for example, to speak about this amazing director, you know, I saw Bullhead and I was so blown away, and then I, you know, I said to my friends, it's like, I'm gonna work with this guy, I'm gonna go and find him and you know, force him to work with me if he doesn't want to work with me. And then he comes, like, then by some reason, you know, I'm being asked to do a film with him, and my life has been pretty much like that. You know, if you send out something very strongly, it kind of comes back to you. I'm sending out a lot of signals to Spain, to Spanish directors. No, I would love to work in Spain. And I know a few Spanish directors and actors, and I feel very connected, obviously, to the Spanish people and to the Spanish cinema, and I have so much respect and love for it. So that would be a great honor. One day, I'm working on my Spanish as well.
Sí, allá atrás, por favor.
At the back, this is a question for Numi. So just a minute ago, we're talking about James Gandolfini. So back here. Numi, like, what do you recall, you know, how you worked with Gandolfini and also the director? What do you remember about him? What do you take with you?
What was amazing to discover, you asked me about my career, and to meet someone like James, who's been doing so many amazing things in his career, and he was such an icon, and respected and known and you know, successful actor in Hollywood and the whole kind of American system. But he was still so grounded and so real and such a beautiful and inspiring human being, and very very humble to the whole business. And to see someone who's been in there for so long and who was not corrupted, that was so inspiring. And it was so much about the work.
Yeah.
And you know, he was a true actor who came in every day with like an open heart, and he was nervous, and we talked about it, like, mm-hmm. that he
Well, I think it was someone. I mean, one of the big things that was very inspiring for us and for me was that he walked in and took this role as if it was his first. He wouldn't just rely on his experience and, you know, say, I'm the big James Gandolfini, I can do whatever I want. He was very humble, but also very capable of being vulnerable. And yeah, that was very good to see, that he just started from scratch, you know, really recreating a character, starting again, finding and creating a personality in Cousin Marv. And also, he was just really, really funny. he made a lot of people laugh, so it was good to have him on set. He was very much respected, but at the same time, he helped you to forget that he was, you know, Gandolfini. So it was actually just having great fun. And we had a bar where we shot the movie, and many of us would actually not even go back to the, like Jim would not even go back to the trailer. He would just sit in the bar with Tom and you, and we would just, and Matthias, we just sit and talk. And then sometimes I was working on a framing with the camera, and then I suddenly hear in the back like people laughing, and it was Jim telling another joke. And so he was really cool. And it was a great honor to work with him, you know. It's very unfortunate. I mean, lots of fans, I mean, of course, his family, you know, they miss him. And I hope the fans are happy now that this is last performance, that is still a nice way of saying goodbye. So.
Congratulations for the film. Congrats for the film. I wanted to underscore, as the director, how does the cop, you know, receive information? He's like going through about his investigation in a very hidden and sort of almost a deceitful way, sort of like the mafia, under the radar, undercover. Was that accidental or was it planned? Thank you.
In movies, nothing is accidental. It's all written, constructed, and I mean, of course, there's magic, and that's the beauty of movies. You know, it starts with a total. It's built up, you know, and of course, sometimes there are like nice consequences of a good preparation, and that you can change your mind and go in a direction that you were not aware of and have it work. And of course, we had the way the policeman works, the agent or the mafia. They're all, it's a system, it's a network, and they have their own ways of working. And I thought it was not too much important to emphasize it and just have it being there as much as I could from the perspective of Bob, the main character. So Yes, it was wanted to be that way.
Yeah. It's funny because it's in a good work relationship, like you say, nothing is planned, and everything is planned. Nothing mm-hmm. is accidental. But at the same time, there's a scene in the movie that we improvised.
Yes. Yeah.
Between me and Matthias in my house in the kitchen before we go to the bar in the end. That was a scene that I felt like we needed, and we spoke about it, and mm-hmm. you agreed with me, and then Matthias came to Brooklyn, and the first time I met him, I was like, okay, we gotta talk. We have something we gotta do. And then we talked a lot, and we improvised the scene, and it mm-hmm. made the cut, and it's in yeah. the movie. And it was not in the script. So it's for me, that's the best, like, if you can have both, you know, a very structured and you know, strong leader like him, but someone who's very open-minded at the same time.
Yeah. I think it's all about if you prepare 100%, you can change your mind 100% without doing anything wrong. Yeah.
Hola. Aquí.
Hello, I'm back here, second row, on your left, second row. Hello and congrats for the film. I wanted to pose a question regarding Bob's character. I think he's impressive, so good. I think Tom Hardy really nailed it. And I'd like you to talk about what was that relationship with Tom Hardy? How did you prepare the role? And what characters, you know, what traits, character traits, did you really want to be present for Tom Hardy to develop?
What you do with what I do as a director with all my actors, I do it with Noomi, with Tom, is we do a lot of, I don't rehearse, but I do a lot of what I call character building. It's talking with the actor about the character and everything that is not in the script. It's about the white. In the white space, and that's where the magic starts. That's where you can help and talk, because it's also for me very important to know how the actor sees the character, so I understand him, what he's doing, so it becomes a conversation about the character. So, and it also means that when we are on set, you know, you do not really start a conversation. You pick up a conversation that started weeks ago, which is, again, the preparation concept is so important. Excuse me. With Tom, we knew that the character that we wanted to show was someone who is hiding something. He has a mask. But how can you show the audience that the face is a mask if you don't reveal what's behind it? How are you going to reveal it? And that was a very subtle, we knew, and then that was also referring to the question of the slow burn, was the mask starts to crack. There's little pieces that start to show the face behind it. And you can only do that if I allow and help the actor, and he helps me to know what is the total story of Bob Saganowski. You know, there's maybe a little example. We decided and we knew very strongly that something had to be shown by this house, you know, where he lives. But there are no parents. So, and we started to build up and said, okay, maybe Bob is a miracle baby. You know, his parents were very old and they had no children. And then one day they got pregnant and they had Bob. So Bob grew up with parents that were very old, so he would lose them at a young age because it's life. So he's still in this house that is exactly the house of his parents, and nothing has changed, and he's still that little kid living in a house with the two parents as a sort of ghosts who are there. And in the movie we show those two little pictures, you know, almost like that shrine with all memories in it. So see, these are little things, you know, and that helps an actor and us to create. And that's the same with Noomi, Matthias, with Jim. We talk, and again, like you said, the scene that came with them Matthias and Numi in the kitchen was the result of character building, because we suddenly start to realize that that scene could be, the scene was written, but not to the extent where we were going with it. And it became a very creative process where the actors actually really can be creative, creating stories as well, storylines, I mean. And Dennis allowed us, the producers allowed us to explore those moments. And you know, that's how we try to benefit from that freedom, yeah.
That's how we roll.
Yep.
Here on the left.
Hola.
Hello, I'm Autor Cruz from Barcelona, from the radio. Michael, I wanted to ask you, in this film we see the other side of the coin of the mafia. We see the people who are really affected by these organizations, and I wanted to ask, why did you decide to focus the story on the people affected instead of, you know, for example, the East, or what were your references as opposed to, you know, the mafia and the noir film? As opposed to The Godfather, you didn't focus on people who have the power. And then Nadia, Numi, tell us about Millennium, about that opportunity. Who are your references? And I mean, you really blew us away. How can you really portray with so much truth all of your roles?
Yeah. Okay. And I'll answer the second question too. I think Numi just has that, it's just raw talent, like pure, and then always capable of making, it's like, you know, raw diamond, and then make it beautiful and cutting it, and every time going back and forth between the original state of being and the act and the character that she's bringing. I think that's something that she's amazing doing. So I answered for you.
Thank you. Yeah.
You want to add something about the question?
No, I think it's like I'm a diamond. What can I say? No. Well, I think I always I don't like to pretend and lie, even though it's a whole, it's a construction. But I try to place things as close to myself as possible, and to use myself, to run it through me. And I made a decision when I was 21, I think, to never be driven by vanity when I'm working. In all my acting decisions, to never make a decision trying to look in a certain way, trying to be attractive or likable or beautiful or sexy or whatever, to always, as much as I can, be truthful to the character, whatever that is, you know. And it sounds like an easy thing to do, but it's something I have to remind myself on. Like, sometimes, you know, I remember this one, actually. Do you remember that some of the producers, they said, Numi's always dressing down. Can you have her not dress down this time? And I'm like, I never dress down. I don't dress up though. So
yeah, that's true. Maybe, and so your first question was about the small, the little people, right? You know, the working class.
¿Cuáles eran tus referentes o anti-referentes?
What were your references or anti-references for the mafia film?
The gangster movie, in its origin, was a social critic to society, trying to tell the story of the voiceless that had to deal with crime because the law was there only to protect the rich. So when there's no law, you still need social structure and organization, and that would be done without law by a criminal network. That's what mafia actually is. Mafia is a alternative of a state of society without the law. Or they make their laws whenever they want, and they change whenever they want. They don't have a constitution. One law tomorrow, new boss tomorrow, new law. It goes like that. So those people have to deal with this all the time. And, of course, many times who's been portrayed were either the bosses and sometimes the people living in that world, and maybe growing up and growing into the structure and become a boss. But I think in this story we wanted to bring only this, that side from you know, when Cousin Marv says, "I used to be feared, I used to be something," you know, and he's losing it, you know, he lost that momentum to become a boss. He just never became. And Bob says it's better this way, you know, and then you feel that he actually still has everything maybe to become one. So it's a very new, I hope, like a new but faithful to tradition, but yet an original approach to the genre, and emphasizing on the character driven part of the story. Does it make sense? Sorry, I had two thoughts at the same time. Sorry, sometimes it happens. It's like, you know, like Tom always says, many people say they're like, that's what's so funny. There are two sides on a coin. Yeah, Tom always says there are many sides to a coin. I love that one.
Yeah, it's
true. There's more than two, he says.
Definitely more than two.
Thank you.
Buenas tardes.
Good afternoon, I'm Lola. Well, firstly, welcome. Thank you so much for this film. It's fantastic. We really were on the edge of our seats, tense. Please tell us a bit more about the themes. First, the protagonist is essential, and that's the dog, the puppy. What's the relationship between Rocco and the lead characters? Was it one dog, several dogs? That's one question, because I thought it was genius. You know, it really humanized and added a fantastic touch to Bob. And the other aspect of the question would be the photography is lovely. It's very dark, but it has magical moments where we see how the envelopes with money are passed from hands to hands. We see James Gandolfini's gaze, some magical moments. Thank you.
Wonderful to hear you speak. Thank you. I think first of all, the story is about many things, but one of the themes in the undercurrent of it is the desperate search for innocence. That's what all the characters are looking for. I mean, they've been just compromised by life, and I think the puppy is a way of showing that's where Bob finds his innocence. Itself. An animal is the symbol of something. That's why we love animals, I think. It's also a little bit his soul, you know. He was in a hibernating state with this because of his past. And finding the dog was the opening, the first sparkle of hope, and go back to something that he lost. So, and I agree, I'm happy you saw that what we really wanted to do is the dog being a dog and not, you know, the ones that respond, you know, in a way that it's almost human and trained and fake. So that's also the way we shot it. They asked me, like, you want the dog to go left or you want him to right? I said, I don't care. If the dog goes left, the camera goes left. If he goes right, the camera goes right. We'll see what happens. And that really worked well, because then also there's a great freedom for the actors to play with it and be, you know, natural with the vibe and have it not like being this fake touch to it. So, and then as far as the photography goes, we decided, Nicola Karakatsanis, who I always work with, we mostly refer to painters when we want to do a movie, and this time...
Can I flick something in?
Oh, yes.
You know, he went to art school. He started with, you know, going to art school. And same as Ridley Scott, you know, they came from that world before they started to do movies and films. And I can see that, you know, every day and on the, like, on set, how you work, and together with Nicholas, but also just in your head, the way you draw. It's almost like you see the world in big paintings, and then you add us in, and we are allowed to be alive in your paintings. But it's very much, you know, the way you see the world, I think. And Ridley has the same thing a little bit, that it's like big drawings.
Thank you. Yeah. It's awesome, and one sentence would really...
No.
So, where was I? Ah, yes, the paintings. we used George Bellows. He's a Brooklyn painter. He worked in early 20th century portraying Brooklyn street life. And it did an amazing way. And when we discovered this painter, while I was scouting through Brooklyn, finding bars and places, I realized that many of the colors that were already in the paintings of Bellows were still existing in Brooklyn today. You know, this cobalt blue, burgundy red, the pistache green, and all those things. So it was very remarkable. So I didn't just want to portray Brooklyn and as a real, just the way it is, but also faithful to a visual tradition of representation. And I thought the paintings of Bellows were really amazing and inspiring. He has these beautiful winter city landscapes where you could see that the blue, cold, the whites were cold blue feel to it. And then in contrast with little touches of red, warm, burnt sienna. And these were two key elements for us. We were always using that, especially in exterior shots. So it was a great inspiration for us to that have as a lead. And I think maybe we stole a little bit of the magic of this painter and tried to bring it alive in the movie. So I'm very happy that you experienced it that way. So I'll tell Nicholas.
Hola. Primero,
Hello. Mikhail, congratulations for the film. My question is for Noumi. Your character, Nadia, has so many scars, psychological and physical scars. She has, you know, just closed a bad chapter of her life, and I want to think that she has a second chance at life and that she will experience a new and good season. Do you believe in second chances, Noumi, personally? Thank you.
I do. I believe in second, third, fourth, five, six. I believe in chances. I believe in changes. And I kind of realized quite recently that I actually believe in all changes. I think my biggest fear is that things will stop, that you will go in circles, that it's not movement forward. So even sometimes, you know, like Nadia, she's been living in situations and relationships that's not been good, and she's been doing kind of bad things to herself. But, you know, if you can force yourself to change, to step out in a no man's land where you don't know what's going to happen, then you have a possibility to find a new road, a new path. And I think for me, what I love Nadia a lot, and I admire her. I know a lot of women that can stay in a destructive and a kind of bad relationship because it's safe, it's home base. You know your demon, then you know your enemy, and it's kind of easier to cope with it. It's sometimes more frightening to step out in something where you don't know what's going to be, and what's going to happen. And for her to kind of leave that and decide, no, actually, I'm going to find a way to like myself. I don't want to live this anymore. And to change, and to be brave enough to do that, and to still believe in the good in people, even though she've gone through so many tough things. For me, that's a real heroine, and she's she might not be, you know, the strongest one always, but something really beautiful that Michael said, that she's like a broken angel, and I love that. We have the little angel, and they. For me, I think through changes and through a second chance or third chance or whatever, you can, if you don't give up, you can always find a way out. I think so.
I agree.
Ahí atrás, por favor, atrás del todo.
At the far back. Good afternoon. Robert Gomez from Venezuela. Congratulations for the extraordinary film. Two questions, one for Mikhail and for Nadia. Mikhail, I wanted to know, what has it meant to you to visit the universe of such a strong novelist as Denis Lehan? What was your relationship with Denis through the production and with that religious universe, which is so firm and it really leaves an impact in Bob? And Nadia, I wanted to ask you, you know, we knew you beforehand as Lisbeth Salander, and we were always, you know, thinking that this is a very crude, you know, sort of harsh and extremely strong woman. And since then, we've seen in other projects just different nuances and an extraordinary fragility, like Baby Call. And now with Nadia. And the question for you would be, were you afraid of always being on the verge of the abyss? I mean, you're a woman who's always about to collapse. You know, doesn't that affect you as an actress? And particularly, what do you think of that metaphor that the story and the director frame with the puppy? It seems like Nadia and the puppy are always orbiting in the same spot. Isn't that dangerous, you know, to show her at the end with this dog and you know, the leash is around its neck. I don't know if that sort of frames what you were mentioning earlier of the girl who's always exposed to danger and is not realizing what's around.
Denis Lehan. He's very generous, actually, as a writer. I mean, he said, this is my story, this is my script, but it's your film. So he gave the script and says, go and make it. And I'll be there and I'll be available for you whenever you want. So that's what we did. And we made changes, we adapted during the process. And I would always go back to him. And I remember actually talking about the ending, the final scene of the film, that we were during production realizing that we wanted to make some changes and that we wanted to have a different ending to it. I mean, in a similar direction, but differently built. And we were just doing it on set. You know, we had walking on the sidewalk in Brooklyn with a piece of paper, and we were just like creating the dialogues and then calling you and Tom in, like, okay, this is what we're doing right now, what do you think? And we're like, oh, maybe this line, that line. And then he would like put it in his pocket, go home, write it out, and next day we had the new scene, you know. So it was a great collaboration with him. It was really cool, yeah. So, and it was, that worked.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
I think I like to explore things and put myself out there where I don't really know where it's going to end up. And to take the risk of losing myself, but not losing myself. I think I like the edge. And it's always more interesting and inspiring and harder to work with to become a person, to take on board a character that is struggling with something and that is not completely together. To try to find the different pieces and find the glue and make her become one. And I think that what my characters have in common is that they're all struggling with something. And life is not always easy. And it's, you know, I think my best films, like all the greatest films, and the iconic characters, film characters through history, they're always fighting with something. It's, you know, like, if it was just like bright and happy and successful, beautiful people, it was, you know, it would be kind of boring. And I think that it's funny. I think a lot of people think that I'm kind of dark and angry and moody and, you know, depressed. But I think I'm pretty happy most of the time. That's why I also can, I want to go to those places, because I find that inspiring. It gives me a lot of energy back. And to work with people like you know, Matías and Michael and Tom, when you collaborate and you explore maybe darker side of humanity, but you do it together. For me, that's it's almost like being in a blessed world. It feels like some kind of paradise, my paradise.
Hola.
Hello, back here again. Hello.
True, because I hear it, you know.
Esta pregunta es para ti, Michael.
This question is for you, Michael. I wanted to know if Tom Hardy was always your reference for Bob, for the leading actor, because for me, we're talking about Tom Hardy. Was he always your first choice?
Was Tom always your first choice?
Oh, is that the, okay, good. exactly.
Te preguntaba si Tom Hardy.
I was asking you if Tom Hardy had always been your first choice for the role.
Que posiblemente.
Because possibly, in a few years, you know, we may see him here receiving the Donosti Award because his career is really, his star is rising. His career is really going all over the place. So perhaps it wasn't your intent, but when you wrap the film. I'm going to see the film after. It's like there's a baton being passed from James Gandolfini to Tom Hardy in what's happening, but also in true life. It's like he's receiving the baton, you know, from James to Tom. Now you are going to be the man, you know, the next big man in film. The next big man in film.
I don't know. Was it a question, or was it like it felt like an analyze, which is a compliment, which I really like. I mean,
English. It's about Tom. That Tom Hardy is for me is a really perfect role for the movie, and it was always your first choice.
I can answer that. I was his first choice, but I said no, and then he went to Tom.
Yeah, I wanted to switch it, actually. Yeah, yeah. It was Bobette, instead of Bob.
Bobette. More important question for me is that at the end of the movie, Jesse Gandolfini, it's happened, the scene that's happening at the movie, and in the real life, for me, I feel like Jesse Gandolfini give the role to Tom Hardy because I think that Tom Hardy is going to be one of the biggest actors of the next year.
I think it's getting really obvious. Yeah, Tom is really, he's an amazing actor. He is. And
there was never anybody else for you.
Oh no, it was the first choice. Yeah, yeah.
It was his first choice.
When I walked into the production meeting. My first production meeting with the producers and the studio. Mostly they always ask you, you know, to make a kind of a list, wish list. And I was at that point was working on Bob as a character, trying to, because it was going very fast. I had the film end of October. I knew I was going to direct and then immediately walked in and started, you know, working because we wanted to shoot for the winter time in New York, so there was not much time. So I walked in, there were like a lot of pictures on the wall of great actors, you know, to just put them up there. It was like a candy store of of the best actors, like a top 50 IMDb list, but then for real. And I was wondering, okay, a couple of names, and then suddenly I looked at the wall and there was this one guy looking at me, it was Tom. And Tom Hardy's picture, and he kept looking at me. I was like, and they asked me, okay, so now about the acting, the casting, who do you think? You have a list? I said, no, there's no list. There's only Tom Hardy. And they're like, great, let's try to call him and see if he answers the phone. And he did, and we Skyped, and he loved it. And then I immediately knew when he was going to do it, I knew with the resonance where I was going to come out with the rest of the cast. I knew immediately, bam. Knew me, like we said before, and then, you know, we met, and the rest is kind of history, so.
Hello. Hello, good morning or good afternoon. Thank you so much. It's such a subtle and lovely film. And then seeing the press conference after having seen the film, you look like your family, you two. I don't know if that's actually the way it was on set, shooting, but perhaps, you know, directing the actors is so wonderful because that respect is so present. What you were saying earlier, you give freedom to the dog, you give freedom to the actors, and we can really detect that. It's evident. Thank you so much for the subtlety. And Numi, I wanted to ask, when are you going to do a comedy? We've seen, you know, you're amazing in this film. I think that you could be a great comedian. We want to see you, but not suffering. So when are we going to see you in a comedy?
I'm going to write one, so she has no choice.
Yeah,
because
I have
we want to work
plan.
Together. We want to work to keep working together, you know. And she's like, okay, can I? And I'm like, good, comedy.
Yeah, I do like challenges, and I like to kind of not do what people expect me to do, so who knows. But and I have a lifelong contract with him. Like, whatever he tells me to do, I'm like, yeah, I'm coming. So, no, it felt like family, you know, definitely. Yeah. It's very rare, and it's very, it's something I think I'm always hoping for. And when it happens, it's the best, you know. You feel completely safe and protected, and you can allow yourself to be, to take risks and to say, like, I don't know what the scene is about, or do really bad takes, but to have the contact and the language together that, like, that I don't know, that he knows that I'm onto something, you know. And it might be a bit dodgy, but I might find, like, the best, maybe the best take is coming, take number 5, but I'll do 3 bad ones. Mm-hmm. And because we have, like, you know, we have a very you know, I think we speak kind of the same language. Mm-hmm. And because of the trust, you know, because I'm quite, you know, I protect myself, and I'm not like, you know, I can be quite tough, and no. I'm a good survivor, but I will only allow myself to be, no, actually not. I want to believe that I'm tough, but I'm not. It feels like family. It felt like we were this kind of dysfunctional family, though. And a comedy, if he tells me to do a comedy, I will.
Deal.
Damn. Sí, aquí,
It's about puppies finding humans in a trash can.
Buenas tardes. Julia Montesoro de Argentina.
Sorry.
Hello, back here. Julia Montesoro from Argentina. Hello, Julia Montesoro from Argentina. I wanted to ask you, the music plays an important role in this film. And it's also balanced as all the other aspects in the art that we see present in the film. It's another presence on screen. How do you work the music in your film? Because it's not invasive, but it really does create atmosphere, and it completes situations. It's an accompaniment.
Thank you. First of all, Marco Beltrami is a very talented, gifted, and very experienced composer who exactly knows how to combine different atmospheres, themes, and set a tone for a film. He's been doing great, great movies, and he's also, like, again, when I talk about it, I just kind of realize that I seem only to work with very nice people, which is really cool. We became friends some 2 weeks ago. We, you know, we go for drinks and still, and when we will work together again, hopefully, if circumstances allow it. We talk, actually it's like with acting, we talk a lot. I express my vision. I don't like really describe what kind of music I want. It's more about referring to, making reference to atmospheres and themes and what I want people to feel at that point. And then again, he is so good in one, because one of the most difficult moments, one of the most difficult parts of scoring a film, for me as a director, is placing the music. You know, when does it start? When does it end? And that's something I'm still learning how to do. And with Marco, we had someone that actually has that skill. So I actually learned from him the way he did it. It was a very, very wonderful experience and a masterclass in scoring a film.
So you are a great pupil.
Sorry?
Usted es un gran alumno, entonces.
So you're a great student of music, because if you learn so much from him, there's a rhythm in the scenes, you know, in the choice of the atmosphere. It goes beyond the musician. Obviously, he's great.
That was loud. I think it's, and that's a good thing you say about talking about rhythm. We have to, Christopher Tellefsen, the editor of the film, actually set the tone as much as the music did. I mean, the pacing of the cutting is equally to the heartbeat of the music. It's always been like that. I mean, sometimes we forget that that the metronome is the cut, and that's where the music starts to live. And it's about a great composer, a film composer, is someone who detects the heartbeat of the film through the cutting, and not just trying to create wallpaper sounds. No. He's like, it's like a tango, you know, with the image. Know where every cut is, you know, the leg, you know, getting connected with the other part. That's when you have the chance. Again, I'm so lucky, two great masters combined, and Christopher and Marco. So then you get great results.
Hola.
Hello. Firstly, I wanted to congratulate you because the film is very good, so congrats to you and to the whole team and crew and cast. And a question, in the end, like at the end, was there ever a question or a doubt whether to cut the final scene? It's sort of like a happy ending. It's not a happy ending, but it has that touch of, you know, or did you have to cut at that point where we see that the character is really, you know, stripped down and naked, how he really is a murderer and he's cold-blooded? Was there any question about cutting that final scene or not? Thank you.
Good question. So be careful with publishing. So don't ruin for the guys who haven't seen it yet.
So. Can I just add something to it? Because what says something about the way Michael works is that you know what you want, you're very specific, but still it feels like you're constantly searching. And the ending was something that we were talking about. And you, quite early, you said, like, you know, it was a different ending in the script. And you started to bring it up. And it's like, and when we were kind of discovering the characters and we went on this journey. And I think we were in the middle of the shoot when you said, like, you know, it's a different ending. It's not the one in the script and I don't really see it yet. But something will come to me. And that, you know... Mm-hmm. That you are, you know, kind of to stay open like that. Yeah. That's for me, you know, something really, really inspiring to be working with.
I think for me it was important that the decisions by the characters at the end are logical to their personality. I wanted also a hopeful ending, because for me this story is a dark. There's something of a Christmas tale. It's like a fairy tale, almost a dark, like in a very grim sense of the genre of the word. So I wanted it to be hopeful, but also very double. You don't even if you would look at the ending and you without sound, you might see something different than you realized that you were seeing. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to end this almost like with, it's like, okay, Mona Lisa, is she smiling or not? And it's kind of the same. His face at the end is like, something happens, and that was absolutely the end, what I wanted the people to feel. And the old scene didn't deliver that yet. So we were in a process of continuously, because we were developing that ending, because we were also developing the characters, even during the shoot, you know, you're discovering the personality of Nadia and of Bob, and we kind of, the spirit of it was the same, but it's how do you get there? And that was, like I said, we were writing it on the sidewalk 2 days before we're gonna shoot that scene where we're still working on it. And it became clear that this was the moment, and I'm trying not to, with my answer, to spoil it for the people who haven't seen the film, but what I tried to do was to, I'm going to spoil it, right? well, you know what I mean.
I think the end is very good. Because if we see that ending where we're all in shadows and... Hello, I'll start again since I didn't have a mic. I think the end is still quite good because in the end, you know, we see how the character is in the shadows after he, well, took a certain course of action, committed this action. We could have cut the film there and it would have been equally good with or without the film. It's sort of like, you know, the apartment where they open the champagne bottle. We don't know if they did that or if that was a gunshot. And in this case, well, I just want to say I like the film. Hey, that's it. That's really the gist of the matter.
Thank you.
Muchas gracias.
Champagne.
Hola.
Hello. Well, firstly, congratulations for the film. I loved it. I wanted to pose a few questions. Before, we were talking about the photography, and you were talking about cold and the warmth and the magic of special moments. I experienced watching the film a moment that was special to me in a sequence where Nadia smiles. I hadn't seen her smile throughout the entire film, and there's just this one take where she smiles, and it's a big smile. It's like her, it's like sunshine, you know, coming to the screen and all this light that she bestows upon us. So I wanted to ask Michael if perhaps you were reserving that moment. You know, she's serious throughout the film. If you're just waiting and waiting to bring that moment to light for that beautiful smile. And Numi, I wanted to ask you something, but they already asked you earlier. So I just wanted to say that I think you're an impressive, dramatic actress. And I would love to see you in a pure comedy. Because I want to enjoy that beautiful smile that we saw in that one take in the film. Thank you.
And sell it as a screensaver. Online, you can like download it. When you're not working, you can have your smile on the screen. Okay, so now, okay. Thank you for, thank you. Actually, what I think is, again, and I love these moments of when people talk about the film and they say, like, she is throughout the film so serious, and then we see this one moment of smile. Actually, she smiles quite a lot in the film. But the good thing is that you don't realize it, because it gives you the feel how she feels. You're actually saying it, I think, because you know how Nadia feels. Nadia is like the, you know, the broken angel. There's a sadness and there's a loneliness, and of course, and that's what you feel. So, and you remember that once more. But she was smiling, you know, when she says, "Looks, he likes it," with the name of the dog. She's like, "He likes it, Rocco," and then she smiles at the table, and she smiles when she comes to the park, when he's training the dog, you know. And of course, then then there was no much reason to smile anymore after that. But and then except, of course, that beautiful, subtle moment in the ending, the final moment in the film. So, and I like that, what you say, you know, it's good, because it means that Noomi did a great job reflecting something and give you the thought of something, although it was a little different, so.
La última pregunta, por favor.
Last question. Earlier you talked about adaptation, how you adapted the script and how important, you know, the director is in that process. There is a scene that I'd like you to talk about a bit in more depth, because I think it really contributes to the tension at the end of the film. And that scene is where we see the cop in the car with a partner, and he's reading the file. We don't know what the file says. But it really adds to the tension, because is he a horrific murderer or not, you know, Nicholas? Or what happened there, you know? So my question would be, what was the writer's intent when he, Dennis, introduced that part of the film? And if the intent was then something that you changed, because we don't know what's in that file. It makes it so tense for us, and I think it really helps the ending as well. And it's a masterful ending. So what's your role in that choice?
We in the story, and also in the book, and in the script itself, we had a little bit more stories, a storyline going around Torres, the cop, John Ortiz, wonderfully playing him. But it was a little distracting and pulling us too much away from the development around Bob's character. So we decided to try to minimalize him, and the main effect of the Torres is not so much telling us, you know, the whodunit aspect of it, but more that he's a threat to Bob, that he is chasing something, and that the more we are deeper in the movie, the more we start to think that he's going to come out with Bob. You know, there's so much going on. And that scene was, of course, helping us to tell, to understand what his conclusion was going to be at the end of the film about all the characters, and knowing that his conclusion is close to the truth, although he can't do anything with it, which is, again, very much the atmosphere of this film. You know, what you see is not necessarily what you're going to get. So it's the whole concept of the lying, the faking, you know, pretending, not being yourself, and so on, is part of this story. And the partner, which, if you're going to read the book, because there's going to be a novelization of the film, so Dennis finally decides to, what he calls, when it was a short story, the failed novel, finally became a novel. And there's going to be much more story about Torres and the backstory with the agent in the car. But from a plot-driven point of view, it was adding to the fact that he was discovering something, and we don't know yet what it is, and we will do it later. And then also, when we discover it, we will see Bob's reaction to it, and again, have an insight to his personality, which is, we're not going to spoil it somewhere, you know what I mean, in the end of the film. So.
I have one more question. Mm-hmm.
One last question. This is for Noomi. So the last sequence where he kills Nicholas, how many times, you know, like takes? I think that was a very difficult film, but you're a difficult moment in the film, but you're so spontaneous and it's so well done. Did you have to do many takes? Was it hard for you? Complicated, complex? Talk about that scene, please.
That was one of the maybe the hardest scenes to do. But it's strange. I think I try to always be open and never repeat myself, because I don't know how the other actors are going to do it. I don't know really what's going to happen. So I try to kind of react on what's really happening. But when you do a scene like that, obviously there's visual effects and there's like a lot of people, a whole team involved in making that work and creating that illusion. But I think I have some kind of ability to put myself in an emotional and psychological state of mind or place where I kind of lose reality a little bit. Sometimes I find it hard to cope with everything else around. I remember when we were working on those scenes in the bar in the end, there was you kind of go into some kind of weird bubble. And sometimes I was like, I remember my PA was asking me stuff and I couldn't understand what she was saying. Sometimes it's almost like you zoom into something and you just try to stay open, I guess. And I was dreaming a lot of nightmares. It kind of got into my heart, I think. And strangely enough, it's not always what you think that will come up. You know, it's like I remember that I felt a lot of sadness for the outcome, for what happens in that situation. That I'm also losing someone that I kind of loved. It's strange. I didn't expect that. So I kind of discovered things in this situation in different takes that was not planned, that just came up. And in one take, I remember that I felt like Bob was kind of came like a savior, that he took me out of emotional prison. And another take, I felt like some complete emptiness, and I was really sad. It was strange what comes up.
Muy bien, muchas gracias a todos.
Thank you very much.